This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
Okay, welcome everybody. We're back, and today on the Bunker Podcast, I got my good friend Christian Kim, who is actually another one of the OGs of the Bunker. Also one of my closest and oldest friends in jiu-jitsu. I've known him since pretty much, I think, for about five and a half years now from when I first started. He is a police officer. I'm not going to say, I don't know which which location. I'll let him say the location of where he works up north. But he also trains jiu-jitsu. He's a blue belt, just like myself. We've both been training around the same amount of time. And it's good to have you on the podcast, Christian.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It's, like I've been listening to all the other ones, and like the other guy said, it's an honor. It's pretty cool. I've never done one of these. So yeah, well, it's an honor to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on. And I know you're joining us from up north. So
yeah,
you're a police officer, but you're not in Toronto. Like, where do you work first? Like, what's
so that? I work for the Anishinaabeasky Police Service. It's like a First Nations police service. Like, Anishinaabeasky Nation is what the First Nations kind of area is called. So I work in Fort Hope. So that's like, I would say, I don't know, a couple thousand kilometers from Toronto. So I got to fly from Toronto to Thunder Bay. That's about a 2-hour flight. And then Thunder Bay up here, or another reserve, another 1 to 2 hour flight from there. So
wow,
pretty far. It's fly-in only, so they're all remote reserves. That's why I do like a 2-week on, 2-week off rotation.
Yeah, yeah. So you train out of NKS, which we've discussed in the podcast before, which is Northern Karate Jiu-Jitsu in Willowdale. You're 2 weeks gone, and then you're 2 weeks on, right? So that's kind of,
yeah.
So we only see you every other, only half the month, unfortunately.
I know. Yeah.
So how long have you been doing that? Like, as far as, how long have you been a police officer?
Well, I've been a cop now I started 2016, August was my hire date. So it's almost been 9 years, which is crazy.
And you've been going up there for 9 years, up to the north?
Yeah, so I started with this service, did 2 years. Then I went to the OPP near Kingston. And then I guess we'll get into that later. That's when I trained with Jordan Preisinger.
Oh, yeah.
So I was there for a bit. Then I came back to this service, moved back to Toronto. And then when was that? That was like 2019. And then I've been with this service ever since. So, yeah.
Okay. So when did you start? You've been a police officer for about 9 years. When did you start jiu-jitsu?
So it's my jiu-jitsu journey is kind of funny, actually. Like,
that's why you're here.
yeah, I know. So I actually, cause like I always did, well, when I was a kid, I did Taekwondo. Like, my parents put me in Taekwondo from like, how old was I? You know, I'm Korean, so that's, of course, that's the martial arts that they got to make me do. But I was like 8 when I started, and I did that up till like when I was like 13. Then I played football in high school. And then when I wasn't playing football, I was like, I kind of want something to do. And then UFC was, like super popular at the time, you know, that era with John Jones, Machida, Rashad Evans, Rampage, all those guys. So I was watching it. I was like, I kind of want to try MMA or jiu-jitsu or whatever. So I actually started my first couple classes when I was like in grade 11. So this would have been like 2006 or 7. Mm-hmm. I was going to combat arts. I don't know if you've heard of combat arts. It's like in Mississauga. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I went there for a few classes, but the adult classes were so late, and I was like 15 or 16. And these guys, I don't know, like, you know, it's then hats off to all the teens that are doing class with all the fully grown adults. I would just get whipped and just thrown around. I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. Yeah. So then I went to university. I kind of stopped. Like, I don't know. I guess I didn't have time to do it. I was kind of into other things. And then I didn't really start up again until like 2017, right after I had started policing. I needed something else to do other than go to the gym. And like, you know, obviously it's a good thing for cops to know jiu-jitsu. So 2017 is when I started again at Rev, actually. And then at Rev, actually, I don't, do you remember Hovig?
Yes,
Hovig,
people there.
yeah. So I was doing more of the striking with Hovig, and I would go to jujitsu like, well, I was still doing the 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I would only go like an average of one to two, maybe one class a week, which I mean, is not enough to actually learn. So I did, yeah. So that's what I was doing until I moved out to Trenton with Jordan. And again, I was kind of doing striking out there. That's kind of when he was like in his MMA phase. Like, I think he was trying to do MMA. So when
So
I
for
would,
what we're talking about, Jordan Presinger, he has Limitless Jiu-Jitsu in Trenton, Ontario. Because you just said Jordan, some people don't know who you're referring to,
oh, right.
right?
Sorry.
But he has a really great gym called Limitless. And that's out in Trenton. I've been there. You used to train there. And Jordan is a really, really great teacher and black belt. Back then, he wasn't even, I don't even know if he was a black belt yet. He was still brown belt.
I think he might have been a brown belt when I started, with him, yeah.
He was doing MMA as well. Because I met you, like, when did you go out to Trenton?
That would have been 2018.
Okay. Yeah. So it's before I met you. Yeah. So you were a Rev and then you went out to Trenton. You trained there
Yeah.
for years.
Yeah, I trained there 2018 to like 2019 summer. But like I was saying, I was doing like kind of doing the MMA and the striking. But these guys were all so good at jiu-jitsu, and I would get taken down over and over and just like brutalized. So I'm like, oh my God, I really need to learn jiu-jitsu or like wrestling, because this is insane. Like, this can't be happening. Because again, I was only doing like, with the 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, averaging like one class a week, maybe one and a half, maybe. But and like, that's not enough to actually learn jiu-jitsu. So when I came moved back to Toronto, end of 2019, 2020 is kind of when I went back to Rev and just kind of started with Arthur, and then kind of just fell in love with jiu-jitsu. And then from there, like, I had actually had asked Arthur for privates at the time, and then COVID happened. But so I he wasn't really taking any new students at the time. And then like stuff kind of eased up a little bit, and then like I started doing privates, and then we ended up at the little underground sessions.
The bunker.
Yeah, the bunker.
The Well, yeah, because I met you at Rev, but that was like at the at tail end
Yeah, that was at
before
the,
you left
yeah.
Rev.
You must have just started then. Yeah.
I just started November 2019, so that's when
Okay, yeah.
you
That's
entered
literally
your
when I came
final.
back. Yeah.
But you were only coming, like you said, once a week. So I
Yeah.
knew you a little bit, but we became friends. But then you, after the lockdowns, you had moved to another. I think you had moved to NKS, right?
Yeah,
So
after the lockdowns, yeah.
but during the lockdowns, we were training together for the bunker, like which was awesome.
Yeah.
And that was so you were one of the originals. There was about four or five guys that were kind of consistent. Ali,
Yeah.
Ara, and Ryan, and then Phil, and then of course you, right? And then we were doing
Yeah.
a long time. So
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
those were great.
those are good times.
Honestly, I think my like some of the best times training was like then, like during COVID and shortly after COVID. It was just fun.
Yeah, I miss it,
Yeah,
man.
good group. Yeah.
It was yeah, at one point I think you were coming more than everybody else
Yeah.
because when you were in town, you were off,
Yeah,
right?
so I could just come during the day, and sometimes it'd just be me and you.
So it was like the people who had nothing, not I had nothing to do, but the people who are more flexible with their schedule.
Yeah.
So we a lot of times it's you and I, and then and sometimes Phil too, because with his police schedule, he's a cop too.
Yeah.
When he was off during the days, and Ali too, like a lot of times their day shifts, sorry, their night shifts, where they would have
Yeah.
days off, they would come, right? So, but I think, yeah, I think you came more than most,
Yeah, at the
sometimes
time,
two or three
yeah.
times a week. Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, it
Yeah, it was great.
was good times.
Was pretty close to my place at the time too, so yeah, the
We
new
always talk.
church is a little far.
Well, I don't even have it. Like, this is the, this is what we were talking about, like, with some of the other guys that. It's interesting how things like change, and you think you're losing something, but then you gain something else. So we had the
Yeah.
bunker, as we've said so many times. I don't want to keep saying the same story over and over again, but we had the bunker. We had this good crew of guys who would come in, and we would train, and then we had our little first holiday tournament, which was just for jokes amongst the eight of us. But then it got, when I got transferred, no more bunker as far as the actual training, right?
Yeah, which I thought was kind of funny because the church is so big.
Yeah, the new one is so big, but when you have a big church and you have like a lot of space, but because it's so big, we use all the space.
So I
there's
see.
no like empty space where I can set up a permanent, like I have my mats there, obviously, because I have everything there for the bunker tournament, but they're in storage. And like, yeah, I could pull them out somewhere and set it up, but it's a lot of work, right? To like set up something just so you can come by for like half an hour and 40 minutes and then roll it back up and then put everything away, right? Whereas in the old place, we had that one storage room, which I made into an actual dojo. And it was just so cool because it was just permanent. It was there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
And nobody was bothering us, right? So,
yeah,
it sucks. It sucks. Like, I still have faith that maybe, like, in the future, like, we're doing some renovations. We're starting some renovations at the church, hopefully this year. And when all that kind of stuff is done, I'm hoping that maybe if there's a little corner somewhere that nobody is using, maybe we can set it up again. But it is a little far in Mississauga for people who are coming from, like, you know, North York and even Etobicoke. To come all the way out there, like where I used to be, which was like technically North York. It was like before
you hit more central.
Yeah. Like we were still North York, even though it was North York West, right?
Yeah.
And it was close. It was still like 20 minutes. You were what? Like you were at Shepherd and Young, right?
Yeah, it was close. Like, yeah, or 20 minutes, Young. Not even. Yeah, 20 minutes.
Yeah. So it wasn't that bad, right? But now it's a little far. But again, if I didn't move there, we wouldn't have the banquet hall and we wouldn't have the big tournament.
Yes. Yeah. So, with one thing comes another, I guess.
100%. 100%. Yeah. So, I don't know. Did you? So, yeah, because then ironically, you missed the actual tournaments.
I competed in one. Yeah, and then one of the last year. Yeah.
The first two, you were working. You were up north.
See, that's the thing with my schedule. It's like, especially with competing too, is like, I almost have to be in a state where like I'm always ready to compete because I don't really have time if I come back, like usually competitions are on a Saturday on a weekend, right? So when I come back, it's like I have 2 or 3 days before the competition or I got like a week and a half. And then when I'm up here, it's like I'm not really training. Like I'm working out and lifting weights, but I mean like, and sometimes I will train with guys here, but they don't do jiu-jitsu. So it's like, it's just like, you know how it is. It's funny because, you know, you've had a couple, actually I'm the third cop you've had on this podcast, which is kind of funny. It's like half the guys on here so far have been cops, but
well, there's a lot of cops who train jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Well, you know, what's funny is like, there isn't, because I would say, I can't remember who told me this. I think they were talking to one of the guys in Toronto, one of the, like the training officers there, he's a jiu-jitsu guy. Like 1-2% of cops in that service do jiu-jitsu. I would say the same thing here. Like,
really?
Me and like maybe me and like 2 or 3 other guys out of like 200 or 300 officers. So yeah, that's like 1%.
I thought it was more because
no.
At the police college in Toronto, like there's they do roles, but you're right. Those, like,
yeah,
how many that's like mats, right?
Like 20 guys will show up out of like, Toronto's probably got like 3, 4, 5,000 officers.
Yeah, you're right. It's a lot. It's a
very small. Few. Yeah, which is crazy.
Well, yeah, it would be good. Like, there's some places where, they're looking to make it mandatory. Like, I know Joel at Rev. Like, when he started the Gracie Combatives program under Gracie Academy, I know he was approached by York.
Yeah, I had seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. If they're going to, you know, these things, you know, how these things go, they go slow with politics and things like that and whatever. But I know that York Police Force, York District Police, they were talking about doing a pilot program where they wanted to get all their officers at one point to be at least exposed to the basic combatives so they could have a baseline of what to do. In difficult situations, and I think that would be great, like to do, like to make it as part of the mandatory training, right?
But, yeah.
And the stakes are more.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard, and I've thought about it quite a bit too. It's like, I've listened to other podcasts or people say, oh, like all cops should be blue belts, but not easy to get a blue belt. You know, it takes like years, right? Years, and then it's like dependent on how much you can train, and like cops are already like we already like I have, for example, for myself, I have training or requals, really, we call it block training, once a year. So it's like there's not really time to do to actually add it into like a work schedule at work.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu's like, because we're so short, they need guys on the road kind of working. And yeah, it's like, I don't know, be interesting to implement. And then with jiu-jitsu or any sort of like combat sport comes possible injuries, right? You can take a guy out of work for like myself, like I was off work for like a couple months with my injuries.
Yeah, well, but that's
So
because you're also a crazy person and you like to be on, or at
yeah,
least
that wasn't
you're
jiu-jitsu related, I
trying to do
guess. Yeah.
MMA. So you were trying, so tell us about that. Like, so you've been training now for a while, right? And you're a four stripe blue now, yes?
Three.
Three stripe blue. And you've been doing it for a while because, of course, yeah, on and off, like back and forth. Obviously, it's going to take a little like longer journey, right? Just with your schedule. But you were also doing for a while. You were like, "Oh, I'm also going to do some striking. I want to do another fight." So how did that go, my friend?
Yeah, like, you know, it's funny because, like, well, I guess, you know, if I go back to when I was like a kid, like, I'd always been doing some sort of striking. And, you know, it wasn't until after, you know, that experience at Jordan's gym getting taken down, like, I was focused more on grappling. And then I kind of missed striking. So I went back into that a bit, right? I was also training at Bazooka. Arthur was still teaching there too, but so I was kind of doing the jujitsu and the striking, and you know, like doing MMA, you know, at least having maybe one fight was just on my bucket list. But you know, like obviously it's not something to be taken lightly.
Sure.
And you know, so anyways, with my injuries, I had LASIK about like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And you know what? They did tell me, oh, you'll be more susceptible to damage in combat sports. But I wasn't doing combat sports at the time. So I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Or your eyes, like your eyes would be
Yeah,
more.
my eyes will be more susceptible to damage because what they do, like they kind of shave your cornea. Like they basically, you're like, they're taking stuff off your cornea, right? So, you, like, if you get hit, your cornea, which is like that little layer on the top of your eye, will be more susceptible to damage, like rips or tears or whatnot. And that's essentially what happened to me. I had, so you know, I would get punched and something would either hit me the eyeball and kind of tear it or rip it. So the actual cornea or eyeball itself would be torn or ripped. So I had seven in my left eye, seven corneal abrasions and a surgery, and two corneal abrasions in my right eye and a surgery. So yeah, like, you know, obviously that affected my training. Like I was off for a bit, and then like even work, I was off for work for a combined 4 months with all the injuries slash surgeries. Yeah, so yeah, I was like, yeah, you
A
know, I'm
lot.
kind of like a stubborn, you know, I can be stubborn or kind of like whatever. I'm like, yeah, it took me that much to realize, yeah, this is not worth it. I gotta
Just
stop.
stick with jiu jitsu.
Yeah, exactly.
That's okay. Yeah, no, I'm happy because every time you get hurt, then it's like, oh, and you can't. Already, we don't see you enough, and then like when you're off, when you're here, and you're like, oh, I can't train because I'm still hurt. I'm like, ah. Oh.
I know. It's Plus, my wife was sick of taking care of me because you can't, like, I could barely see when it happened. And,
100%.
so
Yeah.
yeah, like,
So speaking of your wife, right?
yeah.
So when did you get? So you got married a couple of years ago.
Yeah, 2022 in Korea, actually.
How did that go?
Well, you know what? Like, it was kind of interesting because, like, COVID was like we had loosened up here, but it was still kind of serious in Korea. So, like, you know, like not all my family could come. It's actually just my parents that could make it, and because there were so many restrictions and whatnot. But you know, like Korean culture, the weddings are kind of funny. Like, I don't know if Holly's gonna listen to this, but anyways, like her parents were like, because her mom was gonna retire, and I guess like if you retire, people who come to the wedding don't give you as much money. I guess that's kind of what was explained to me. I don't know. It's like Korean culture, right? So anyway, so we had it then to time it with her before her mom or her dad retired to, get more money for the wedding and whatnot. But Korean weddings are so funny. It's not nowhere near like what North American weddings were, because we had the we did all the photo shoot like 2 days before the wedding, which was exhausting. It was like an entire day of taking photos, changing outfits, the Korean traditional, they call it hanbok, that kind of attire, then a suit and casual clothes. Then we go to the wedding. Our day started at like 4 a.m. We had to go get makeup done, makeup and hair. Then we go to the venue.
You too.
Me too. Yeah. I know, right?
That's why he looks so good in those pictures.
Yeah, I don't normally look like that. Anyway, so then we go to the venue, we do the ceremony, we change into so we traditional clothing, change into this into a suit, do the ceremony again, guests eat,
Why
and
the two ceremonies?
I think one
Because
is
they're both
just,
Korean.
yeah, one is just in the traditional clothing, and one is just like in a suit.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
Oh,
so
sorry, maybe not two ceremonies, two
why?
like just like, I don't really know, actually.
Like
It
two
was just
parties
a,
for the same thing?
yeah, it was kind of just a like a blur to me. And my Korean's not like the best either, so I didn't know what was going on. They just told me, okay,
Your
do
wife's
this,
from
do
there.
this.
Your wife's from there, right? Like.
Yeah. And then the guests eat, and we didn't get to eat, so we were starving. And then like
Get to
once,
eat.
I don't know, that's just how the Korean weddings are. It's
What?
at a hotel, and then like after that's all done, they kind of just kick you all out, and that was it. I was funny because after the wedding, me and Holly went down to the, it's in a big hotel, right? Latte Hotel in Korea, which is like a really big hotel in Seoul. And and there's a department store under, like a fancy department store with all these restaurants under. So we were so hungry, we just changed into our clothes, still all the makeup on, went down and ate at one of the department store restaurants after the wedding. It was an interesting experience. Yeah. Very
So, like,
different.
wait. Let me clarify. Okay, so I want to get the timeline down. Okay, so
Yeah.
you woke up at 4 in the morning, you went and got makeup done. Then
Yeah.
you had the traditional clothing, first of all, right? And
Yeah.
you did the traditional part of the Korean wedding, right?
Yep.
And
Yeah.
then you changed. You put on the modern kind of suit and, wedding dress, the modern stuff, right? And
Yeah, that
you
might have
did.
been reversed, actually. I think we did the suit first, then
Oh,
the
okay. Okay,
traditional.
so. You do the two different parts of the ceremony, right? I think you had before that also because I think like you're Presbyterian, right? And Holly's the same background, yeah?
So she, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess basically I think you were telling me like you have the Korean like the cultural traditional
Yeah,
wedding, which
so
not Christian, it's more the old school, right?
yeah, because Korea's, well, Presbyterianism or like Christian religion is still really big in Korea, but Buddhism is also really big there.
So you're doing kind of like the cultural ancient stuff, and then you're also doing the Christian part, which is in the suit, right? Yeah, so you did those two things, and then so you did all this in a hotel, right? And then there was food for everybody else, but you didn't get to eat any.
No, we had a tasting like the day before just to make sure all the food was okay, and I guess that was our meal.
Wait. So the people, do they party? Like, is there a party in?
No, there's no party. You
Okay,
just
so where are the people eating?
talk. What's that?
Where are the people, your guests? Like, where are they eating?
Oh, they're just like off to the sides at tables on the sides, and then
Okay.
we're doing that whole walkway and little ceremony in the middle.
And they're just like eating while watching.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when you're done, you don't get to go over to the table and eat something?
No.
Okay.
No,
And so there's no party
I
after that.
know.
No
No,
dancing,
there's no party. It's
no
so
music.
different. It's almost like a factory where, and then they'll have another wedding that day, right? And then another,
So
it's cut.
do other people do they do parties? Like, do they do dancing and
I don't know. I have no idea.
all right.
Kind of interesting.
So even though it's been like 3 years now, you owe us a party now. Like, you gotta throw some big bash
I know.
here with all
We
your friends, get a DJ or
thought
something.
about doing a wedding here and whatnot, but it's like it is kind of expensive, but yeah,
Super
we really
expensive.
should do like a get together with like
Well, I'm just everyone that, right? Obviously, in Canada, it's way worse too. But yeah, that's funny, but like
I know,
fascinating, but it's weird.
It's odd, yeah.
But you don't get to like party, like just.
I know. I thought it was weird too because I had no idea what was going on the entire time. I was just doing whatever there's like a wedding planner that follows you around, and she would tell me what to do, and I would just do it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's okay.
yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that because I know that you had the kind of the two services and you were doing all the photo shoots before because I was confused because you guys were doing the photo shoot like 2 days before and then you posted some pictures and then I messaged you. I'm like, congratulations. And you're like, I'm not married yet. I'm like, yeah. I'm confused.
it's a huge process. It's interesting.
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then and obviously you came back here. Holly moved here, right? From like she was coming from Korea. That she wasn't living here yet.
No, she was living. She actually moved here when she was 16 for high school by herself. So she's been living here by herself.
Wow.
Since yeah, so she's 30. So she well, actually, maybe she's a little younger. She might have been 14 or 13.
So independent.
Like 15, 17 years. Yeah, because all her family's in Korea. She doesn't have any family whatsoever here. Wow. You know, other than me, I guess.
Well, yeah, amazing. And she has to give a little plug for Holly, like she has a food blog, doesn't she?
yeah, she's got well, a.
You want to tell us about that?
Toronto Foodie Fatty. It's an Instagram page. You know what's funny? We were actually just at a wedding the other day before I came up here, and we had to do a speech, and I plugged it in the speech too, which was hilarious. She got some followers after, but yeah, it's called Toronto Foodie Fatty. She kind of just. You know, she had started, yeah, because she would take pictures of food, right? A lot of Instagram girls take pictures of food, you know, post on Instagram, you know. But so she ended up doing like a food page for it, which is, yeah, it's fairly popular now. I don't know how many followers she's got now, but.
Well, I follow her.
oh, yeah. so she'll get sponsored from some of these places. She'll go, she'll do a little review, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
But she's doing that full time or no?
No. Just kind of like a little side gig, yeah.
Yeah, but she enjoys. She likes food. Your wife likes food.
Yeah. Oh, well, we both like
food.
Yeah. yeah. oh, man. Since I've met her, oh, my God, I've gained a lot of weight.
Well, not that bad. Come on. Dude. I don't know how your wife stays fit. She doesn't change.
I know. Oh. Yeah. she doesn't work out as much right now. She does like a boot camp fitness, like, you know, like F45, that sort of thing.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I remember you brought her jiu-jitsu once. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it was funny.
That was good times.
I think she'd be good at it, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe she doesn't have the patience for it.
I don't think she has the patience for it. She started yelling. It's like, why are you doing this to me? It's like, well, yeah, you know, there's resistance involved here, right? Like,
yeah, she's funny.
That's okay. No, you got a good girl. She's wonderful. And I wish you many, many years together for the rest of your lives.
yeah, thank you.
all right. So now you've been training. You've been training NKS for how many years now?
I started like basically right after we had finished training together, you know, with Arthur. So is that 2021 or 2020?
Okay.
It might have been 2020 in the summer. Or maybe it was 2021. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Like right after Mark opened the program back up, I think, because I listened to Mark's podcast as well. I think he opened it back up like right around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. And so you've been there since then, and you've done some competitions, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, how many competitions do you think you've done in your total?
I did a couple at White Belts, mm-hmm. a couple no-gi. And then only a couple at blue belts. Yeah, so not too many. Maybe four or five. Maybe.
Okay. So the magic question is, what do you prefer, gi or no gi, and why?
I like them both. I'm not one of those guys that's like gi or no gi's better. Honestly, I think. You know, if you're like just someone who does jiu-jitsu like for fun or casually, you should probably do both. It's just like, it's just, you know, and for myself, I always think of it too, like for my work, or you know, like sometime on the street, right? Because you know that is a part of learning a martial art, you know, just to be able to defend yourself. Like, you know, the argument for no gi is like, ah, oh, whatever, you know, like you're not going to be able to have grips like a gi, but everyone wears clothes, right? So
Well,
there's always
to
going to be,
prevent that,
yeah,
so
it's
I've
always,
heard for both, right? Like some
yeah.
people say, I do no gi because practically people don't wear gis on the street. Granted, but then other people say I do gi because people wear clothes like jackets and shirts and things like that.
Yeah.
The concept is I can use those things to choke people and control people, right? So
Yeah.
I think it's valuable from both points of view.
Oh yeah. I like them. I like them both. Like it, they're both you know, different. Like I like doing different things in both. Like I kind of was getting into leg locks and no gi. You know, I like to wrestle too, so and then in the gi I like doing judo and whatnot, and yeah, just different things with both, but honestly I like them both.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's no secret that I'm a gi guy, but that's because
Yeah.
I'm old and big and slow and I do some no gi, but yeah, I don't
I
know.
do like wearing the gi because, you know, like if you got a little extra, you know, body weight, you can hide it in the gi. Like if you're wearing a rash guard, it's like,
Yeah,
you know, you gotta
not
look,
a spandex guy.
gotta be kind of jacked to look good in spandex, you know.
Yeah, I did not look good in a
Yeah,
rash guard and little shorts
me neither.
and spats. You're fine. I'm a different story. But it's more like just the movement. It's really good. Like I'm not gonna lie. Like no gi is really good. It does make you better at the gi as well because you have to think in a different way. You don't have the grip, so you have to like really kind of adapt and to. The techniques that you use in no gi are applicable to gi always, but not all the techniques you use in gi are applicable to no gi. So it doesn't go both ways.
Right.
So anything
Right.
that you learn
Yeah.
in no gi, you can always apply in the gi.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it not superior, but it, as a tool, I think, like for your art,
Some,
it's good.
yeah, I mean, like some things are actually easier, no gi, like, you know, obviously in the gi you have grips, right? Like, so playing Delaheva is obviously a lot easier gi because you can break their posture with the collar grips, sleeve grips. In no gi, like, yeah, it's like it's kind of hard to play Delaheva, but that being said, like some positions are a little easier. Like if you're playing reverse Delaheva and you want to like invert or kiss of the dragon or whatever, it's like, or you're like maybe playing a quarter guard or something, like guys can't grip your sleeve and pull it up or grip your collar and pull it up. So
Yeah, it's a different game.
it's, yeah, it's a different game. It's a little, it's kind of nice to not, like if someone's really strong and they grab your gi and kind of like sticky in that position, it's like kind of tough to break their grip sometimes.
Yeah, again, I don't know why I'm arguing for no gi more, but like the no gi does for it, like okay, as let's say for pressure passing,
Yeah.
or general passing, like the concepts of like keeping your head down. Keeping pressure on the body as you move around, things like that, pinning the person, you learn it better in no gi because, like you just mentioned, like somebody can't grab your sleeve. It's true. So in no gi,
Yeah.
what do? Like in gi, you can grab somebody's sleeve and you can posture up. You can pull the sleeve towards you, right? Like you're pulling on the reins of something, right?
Yeah,
Hold them that
yeah.
way. But in no gi, it's the opposite. You have to pin the person down,
Yeah, it's
right?
tougher because they're slick and they
Yeah.
can move, and you don't have the grips to retain the pass. Like, you know,
Well,
sometimes you can, yeah.
the pass is different because instead of pulling up, you have to pin the wrist down to the ground,
Yeah, yeah.
and then so your movement is forward, right? You have to put pressure on the person on their stomach, on their chest. Like you have to have your head down, you have to pin the person down. You have no choice but to go forward. That's what I'm trying to say. To pass,
Yeah.
right? Which is a really, really good skill to have, even in gi, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I find that even in gi, I try lately. I try to incorporate more no-gi grips because I find that it helps me, drive forward when I'm passing, when I'm trying to like pass different guards and things like that. It's a different kind of mentality as opposed to like disengaging and
Yeah.
back, right? Of course, sometimes
Yeah.
pulling back is good too. It depends on what the guard that you're dealing with, but Yeah, no-gi definitely forces you to go one way. You have to, like, you know, overcome the obstacle as opposed to disengage, because you don't have, like you said, you don't have the grips, right? So I think it can be really, really good. But again, I just don't do it enough because maybe I'm self-conscious, but I don't know. But and I'm too slow. These guys are really fast.
I don't really do it much anymore either. I'm just on Sundays at NKF.
Yeah. Also, like, who doesn't like to dress up like a 16th century feudal Japanese soldier? You know?
Yeah, I know. I mean, you have a bit of a gi addiction, but I'm a little off that right now.
I don't think it's just me and you. Like, I think it's a lot of people.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Nobody other. Do you notice how nobody really, okay, not nobody, but most people, when you ask them, how many gis do you have? People are like, that's private. Don't ask me that question. A lot of people don't want to answer that question. Oh,
man, I had to stop a bit. I still have some I haven't even worn.
Well, your wife messages me. She doesn't
know. Oh, yeah.
I haven't bothered you in a while, but she goes on your Instagram and then she's like, why are you sending pictures of geese to my husband? Stop it. Right? And she'll scold me, but she's scolding me through your account. So
I know, it's
a bit to understand that you're not messing with me. That's actually your wife.
You know? I know, that's funny. It's been a little while.
Yeah, I haven't bothered you with geese in a while. I don't want her to hate me. But, you know, it's fun though. You know, like, what else
do
you
do? Yeah, it is.
What else do you do? You're not gonna trade stories about spats.
I know.
It's like a rash card's a rash card.
Yeah, geese are way cooler. Yeah.
They are way cooler. I was like, maybe I should make a bunker gi. Would anybody even care about that? No. I'm like, yeah.
I like those t-shirts you make. Some of them are pretty pretty funny.
Well, interesting. So I was thinking about that. Like, I was like, you know, like, a lot of people ask me about, like, can I get a bunker, like, just a standard bunker t-shirt? Because it's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of people like the logo and just, it's kind of, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's a cool name, the bunker. And
yeah, it is.
And it also expresses, like, a lot of, like, what a lot of us did during the lockdowns, you know, like, our kind of our illegal training, all this kind of stuff, right?
That was a big part of our training during the entire lockdown, you know, whether it had been at the bunker with you or with Arthur, or, you know, when
on
NKS,
Zoom,
NKS started again. Actually, there was the second lockdown, Omicron, NKS had, you know, we're doing stuff too. So it was cool. That whole period, kind of looking back on it now, it's pretty fun. I learned a lot during that
too. Oh, yeah. Sure. That was my formative years.
Me too, I think.
In jiu-jitsu. So yeah, I think a lot of people identify with that kind of idea. So I was thinking, you know, like, a lot of people are asking me, can I buy a t-shirt? So I'm thinking maybe I'm going to make t-shirts, at least the basic bunker one, because a lot of people have been asking me about that. I have a few other ideas, like some of the kind of funny memes that we've created over the years with the bunker, like the Underhook Undertaker.
Oh, what about the Krispy Kreme Killer?
The Krispy Kreme Killer. I don't want to say, we're saying all these things now, people are going to steal them. The 30 people on the podcast might go out and steal our ideas. But I am thinking about actually creating a few and just, you know, selling them like as cheap as possible, just because I think some people like them. So we'll see. Yeah, who knows?
Cool.
Maybe something coming out.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. It's also a good way to support the actual tournament in December.
So
I'm thinking about maybe like doing that, kind of help cover some of the costs of the tournament. Because like the tournament, like, it's not super expensive to do, but I do cover, like, I do everything out of my pocket, right? So
yeah, it's
so if it can offset that, I think it would be nice. Or even use it, maybe do some kind of, like, use it as a fundraiser to kind of maybe give back and enhance the program.
It's a good idea.
I thought about doing something like that, where it's like, hey, maybe we sell some t-shirts and then take the proceeds and make the experience of the trip better, you know. Some who knows what we can do, but we'll see. Yeah. I doubt Shoyuro will want to do a collab with me, you know, like
you never know. I don't know.
Yes, yeah. Right? Bunker X, Mendes Brothers X, Ruka X, Shoyuro X, Tenora. Yeah, right.
That would be cool.
It would be very cool, but I don't see it anytime in the future. We'll see. Nice. So, I was going to ask you one more question, I think, because, like, you know, I was saying that some people started sending me questions to ask my guests.
Oh, which is interesting.
Yeah, a few people, like, actually, the few listeners that we have, So sometimes they're like, "Oh, ask some of these questions of your. We'd love to hear some of these." So, so I'm going to ask you a different one from the other ones that I asked. One person said, "Ask this: what techniques are you currently working on, and how are you developing them? So, like, what are you kind of into right now? If you're into anything."
Yeah, like I, you know what, I've just been kind of working on my guard, right? Like, because, you know, for a long time, like, you know, as like kind of what I was saying before, you know, when I want to compete, like, I kind of have to just be in a state where, like, I'm just ready to compete because I don't really, you know, I don't have a camp, I guess, because I'm away for half the time. So I was only focused on my, like, A game stuff, right? Takedown, pass. Same judo throw, same pass, like over and over and over again. I think I did that for like 2 years in that time period where I was trying doing MMA too. And, you know, like I didn't have any progression in my guard. So right now I'm kind of just working on a bottom game, you know, just doing different things here and there, taking bits and pieces, trying to develop that. So yeah, like a lot of butterfly. I've been liking butterfly a lot lately, just trying to stay seated, you know, like not letting someone dictate where I'm playing guard, you know, trying to bring things to my game, which is kind of an interesting part of jiu-jitsu. Sometimes you're not really thinking that, like cognitively, right? You're like, you're just like, okay, whatever, we'll go with the flow. But I find like now I'm trying to stay seated, forcing people to come to my game where, you know, I can play butterfly, forcing them down to the two knees. Like I really like the cross collar grip. I've been playing De La Hiva quite a bit, trying to get under to X. Deep half, I still really like deep half. I really like the waiter position. Half guard two, butterfly half. You know, I mean, like all the guards are kind of like interconnected because it's like, you know, it's different from, you know, when someone's standing to when they're on their knees to split squat. Like you kind of have to play a different guard in all those positions. But 100%. Yeah, I've been cognitively just trying to like, or you know, being conscientious of like just trying to impose my game from guard instead of like letting someone dictate where I'm playing guard. Sure. That's kind of what I've been trying to think. Yeah.
And it seems like you focus on lower, you know, like a lot of people don't, well, I don't know if they think of it like this. Like a lot of people, I don't hear a lot of people talk about like this, but I'm sure somebody has, like, you know, with guard, I don't know, the way I break it down in my head is that there are a lot of people who will attack the upper body with guard. People who attack the lower body with guard.
Interesting.
So, for example, you know, lower body, De La Hiva, deep half, X, single leg X, all those things are, you're basically attacking the legs, right? Your guard is all about, even though you may have grips above, obviously collar grips,
right? Yeah.
But the main thrust of the guard is the lower body. And then you have the upper body, you know, lasso, half lasso, spider, right? And then different permutations of that where you pull them down, maybe switch to an omoplata, things like that, right?
Right.
So that stuff is attacking more the upper. You're tying up the arms like they're a marionette or something, right?
Right.
That's the way I break it down. It's like, and I
know. Okay, yeah. I didn't think about it like that, actually. That's kind of interesting.
Well, I wasn't thinking about it like that either, but like this year, I kind of like, not dawned on me, but it was just like I had a mini epiphany one day. I'm like, okay, so what part of my body is this guard player attacking, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, there's great guard players who just attack everything, right? Like but people tend to focus on one or they're better at one area than the other, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it seems like you're focused. I do the same thing. Like, obviously, I'm half deep, half kind of guy. Like you said, like I don't play a lot of De La Hiva, although I have been branching out that way to you know, X, modified X, things like that. But mostly, I'm a half guard kind of player, right?
Yeah.
I like playing the half. I like going deep half, going to the waiter, sweeps, things like that, right? You know, so that's where I'm comfortable. But I know what you're saying, because you used to play a lot like top game, and you were really good at not so much the pressure passing. I found that what you are good at is like you're fast, and so you're agile and you're fast, and you're good at floating. For lack of a better word, right? You're good at floating, like on top of a person, and adapt. You're good at switching sides, jumping around, you know, but always keeping that pressure, like that pressure point.
Yeah, I'm kind of like a more like a mid-range passer, I guess. I really like passing from like headquarters as opposed to like Toriando's or like pressure passing. I'm kind of like more of a mid-range. Yeah, maybe like more of like a float style sort of like,
Which is very different than switching and then playing guard, right? And yeah, it's good that you're doing that because it's gonna round out your game, right? Like I did the majority of my competitions were, top game, right? Because I'm a big guy, right? So it's, do a take, do some type of judo takedown, right? Pressure pass, and then, work the top. And only recently, even though I've been playing, half guard for a very long time, only recently now am I comfortable enough where I'm pulling guard in a competition, where I'm, well, I'll just pull an ultra heavy, which is hilarious.
I
I'll pull
thought you were,
directly to a half.
I think you were doing that like maybe the tournament before Masters Worlds or maybe at
No,
Masters Worlds.
I did it in the last two tournaments I did, which was the Oshawa Open in February 8th, and then in the Ontario Open, which just happened a couple of weeks ago, was the first ones where I immediately pulled a guard.
Oh, I thought you did it at Masters Worlds too, that you had pulled.
Yeah, the Worlds was my first attempt, and it went horribly because it was my
I
first
do. I
time.
kind of remember now.
Yeah, remember, right? It was horrible. It was like where I was like I pulled, but I didn't pull properly, and the guy just. I didn't catch the leg, right? And the guy just turned, and then it was a miserable dogfight, nonstop. And it wasn't like, I lost like 2-0. It was close, but it was just a miserable fight, right? And as it usually is at ultra heavy, but in the last two, I was actually able to do it effectively and win, like to actually, pull to the half and then work, get into a deep half, sweep, and then come up and then work top game. So. It's taken a long time, like a lot of years of doing that as a big guy who's slow, but it's good. Like you said, it's worth it because then you don't just have one game; you have a multi-dimensional game, right?
For sure.
So that's good. So hopefully, in the future, you'll be maybe you'll go to a competition and you'll actually, pull guard instead of like.
Because like a comp or anywhere, right? Like somebody might have a better A game than you. They'd be better at the A game than you. So you need something, you need to be just kind of well-rounded, right? So
And I also like it when people do things you don't expect in their weight class. People tend to gravitate in different weight classes to, like, okay, let's say small guys are guard players, right? A lot of guys, right? And big guys are takedown guys, right? And so this is where people gravitate to. So when you see something different, it's fascinating to see.
For sure.
And you don't expect it, or the opponent doesn't expect it, right? So that's what I don't know. Like that's one of my goals that has been like that's why I work with Arthur so much because Arthur is a guard player. People are like, why are you working with him? You're this massive guy. I'm like, yeah, but that's the game. Like you want to learn as much as you can about things you're uncomfortable with, right? Nice. So are you looking at any competitions in the future? I know it's hard for you with your schedule, but do you have your eye on anything?
Maybe provincials. That's like later in the year, right?
That's in December, I think. The provincials,
Something
I
like
think they are.
that.
So you got some time.
Like maybe some sort of local, bigger local competition if my schedule allows it. It's hard because taking because I already took my vacation this year to go to Korea, so like I can't really be taking time off, just for like a jiu-jitsu competition, right? I mean, I did last year with Masters Worlds, which I wasn't real, which was kind of like a little bit more of a trip to me because
Yeah,
I'm
we all
going to Vegas, right? Like, because I hadn't been to Vegas and I went with a buddy of mine that doesn't actually do jiu-jitsu. So we were like having a great time. And then by the time it was time to compete, because we got there like, I don't know, Thursday or Wednesday, and the comp's not until Saturday. So we were kind of like doing a bunch of stuff. And like by the time it t came to the competition, I'm like, oh man, I got to compete.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. Like, I work on the weekends. It's very hard for me to take time off, right? It's I can't find replacement priests. It's very hard. It's not like I can just ditch. People they have weddings and baptisms, and they expect their priest to be there because they know their priest.
That's
It's
right,
very, very hard to say, hey, sorry, I'm going to do. I don't do that usually. Like, I don't say, hey, I'm going to jiu-jitsu competition. Too bad, I won't be there. Here's some. priests you don't even know. Like, people don't like that, and it's not appropriate. So for me, like, it's like you, for you as well. Like, for me to book, for you, it's worse because your schedule doesn't come out, and when it comes, you're at the mercy of whatever your schedule comes out. It's not like you can book something 6 months ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I have to book something 6 months ahead of time. Depend on the program. You know, when OJA, Ontario Jiu-Jitsu Association, they usually publish like the list of their tournaments in January for like the whole year. And I really rely on that because I need to know. And sometimes they change them, which sucks because it really screws up my schedule. But I need to plan on my year, like a year ahead of time, so I can book off those.
Oh.
Or else it's not
nowhere near.
Yeah, it's not.
Nowhere near that organized.
Well, I have no choice, or else I will never be able to compete because I can't take that time off, right?
Yeah.
So I have to make sure I tell people, it's like, no, I can't do weddings, or I can't do this on these days. If it's a Sunday, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. I'm not competing on Sundays. If it's a Saturday, I have to book it off way ahead of time so people know.
Okay. Right?
So,
gotcha.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to kind of carve out the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Still pull it off.
Yeah, you do. You do.
But yeah, so we're coming up like, we're almost at, you know, it's almost an hour.
Wow, that was quick.
Well, fast. It flies by. So I'm gonna ask you one last question for the, and then we'll kind of, I think, wrap it up.
Yeah, okay.
So the question is, again, from one of our listeners, says, in your jiu-jitsu journey, what were some obstacles that you had to overcome, and how much of it was mental versus physical?
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of funny. The jiu-jitsu journey as a whole. Yeah, like when my first introduction to it as a kid, like kind of just something I wanted to try and do for fun. And then like me and my friends when I was in high school would watch UFC, you know, in one of our basements, and then just kind of fight in someone's basement. So like, you know, it was just fun for me at the time, and I didn't get back into it obviously until like I, you know, started working as a cop. And then like as far as physical and mental, like when I started, you know, again, like up until I came back during COVID, I was only doing like the 1 to 2 classes a week, which wasn't enough. So I would say at that time it was mental, because I'm like, oh, like how come I'm not getting better at this? And it's hard too, because like you kind of have to, like, you know, you see the guys that get good real fast, right? Like they're always studying, or like they're always like when they're free time watching YouTube or whatever, reviewing whatever they learn in class, or watching YouTube videos or whatever. So I wasn't doing any of that, right? Like it's so I'd say the first bit was definitely mental. And then, you know, once I really got into it, kind of started immersing myself, you know, with Arthur and Mark, you know, and then you guys at the bunker. You know, the physical part has not really been that difficult for me, I guess, with the jiu-jitsu. You know, like, I guess now you can, you know, I'm getting a little older, right? So you don't recover as fast. And then when I'm at home, I try to train as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally every day. I try not to take any rest days. So by the time I'm done, I'm like kind of wrecked when I'm coming back up to work. But then I got the 2 weeks to recover, which is kind of nice for my longevity, because, you know, a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, like, they keep training, you know, they'll train through injuries, things will get worse, right? I have the forced 2 weeks of rest up here.
Sure. So,
and then I can do, well, I guess you can call it rehabilitative stuff, right? Like lifting weights or whatnot, cardio. So the physical part hasn't really been too bad. I think it's mental, because, you know, like now at this point, you know, like, you know, you'll go through this, right? You know, I think I'm at one of these, like, you know, you start plateauing and you start to have to start learning different things, you know, developing other mental pathways. So I would say for myself, it's mostly been like a mental journey. And it's hard. It's hard to do something, even though you might love it, it's hard to do something for a long time, you know, which is crazy, because, like, you know, like I'll see guys like Arthur or Mark, you know, they've been doing jiu-jitsu for so long, and I look at them and they're still so in love with it, and, you know, they're constantly learning stuff, even though they've been black belts now for a while. You know, they're obviously really good, but they're constantly learning, and it's cool. It's cool to see. Yeah, I would say mental for me, it's like it's all, I would say it's all mental.
That's understandable. But then you also have like training partners like me where I train double the amount as you do and you still kick my butt. So, you know.
Well, I wouldn't say
there's
that.
Hope, there's hope for you. Yeah, some guys move fast in less time and some guys move really slow in double the amount of time. So, you know, it's okay. It all balances out.
I didn't say that.
Well, I'm saying that. Oh. It's the truth. It's like sometimes, and I guess this is a compliment for you. I'm not being nice because you're my friend. It's the truth. It's like sometimes I forget that you're gone. Two times,
really?
Like 2 weeks? No, because you are good at I think you're pretty good at jiu-jitsu, and when we roll together, okay, you're a little younger than me, and you're thinner, and you're more agile than I am, but yeah, it's hard to roll with you, and I'm double your size, like I'm big, right? And then I forget. It's like, man, I really suck because Christian only trains half the time that I do because he's gone like half the month, and I'm training like four times a week. Still can't meet him. It's so horrible.
No. So,
you know, it's, and that's good. That means that, you know, you retain and you train well and you use your time efficiently. And so you're progressing your jiu-jitsu quite well. If you're only training half the time as other people, okay, again, don't use me as a paradigm, but, but you know what I mean? Like it's, so it's, it all works out, you know, as long as you stick to it. Sometimes that break to kind of digest all the information is good.
Oh yeah, it definitely is. And then it's just like a good break for me to heal because I've been aside from my eyes, which is not jiu-jitsu related, but like, aside from that, like, well, knock on wood, I've been pretty lucky with, I don't even want to say anything. I don't want to jinx myself, but you know, injuries, cause that'll take you out for a while. Right. Like, especially, you know, as you kind of get up there in age, like, yeah. Okay. If you're 18, 19, 20, you get injured. You know, you can heal kind of quick, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, once you get a little older, and then if you have responsibilities, like, getting injured is tough. It'll take you out of the game for a while. I think that's why Arthur and Mark are so, like, you know, Arthur's always saying, oh, no straight arms on the mat, right?
Yeah.
It's like, because, yeah, he's seen it. I'm sure he's seen so many, and then and he's talked about it'll take you out for, like, some guys never come back, right? Some injuries can be so bad that, like, you don't even come back, so.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Arthur, for sure, and Mark, but, like, as always, I'm grateful to him because he's always safety in jiu-jitsu.
Safety, and, like, even for myself, like, I'm always wary of where I and other people are in positions because, you know, like, even like it happened to me once. It wasn't like a serious, it wasn't an injury really, but like I was in mount, like on mounting somebody, and like he was new and spazzy. This was actually at a gym I was visiting. He might have been a wrestler or something. Anyways, like he bridged really hard. And you know when you're in mount, your heels are like kind of like tucked and like kind of like trying to, by the guy's hips. So he like bridged super hard and then landed on my heel and kind of like almost heel hooked me. And oh, I'm geez. Like, oh my God. Like
just from the weight.
Yeah, just from the weight. I'm like, man, like I'm in top mount and there's still like danger for injury. So like, it's just like, I'm always trying to be wary. I'll never like try to force myself or someone else in a position because, like, you know, that's kind of when injuries will happen. Just like, just trying to be wary, you know, like Arthur says, like, oh, don't post like this and side control or whatever, you're gonna get rolled over your, you know what I mean? Fingers, like, just that sort of stuff. Yeah,
make sure your leg is always parallel to the body when you're in technical mount, all these kind of things. Yeah,
like, oh yeah,
these are little like things that. But I see even brown belts don't do them, like in other clubs.
Yeah,
like, your foot's out of like a kickstand and then you try to roll the guy and you're rolling onto your own leg and you tear your ACL or something, right? It's horrible. It's
like, yeah.
Longevity is so key. And yeah, as an older guy, I'm like 44 now. It's like, I need to have longevity. Right. So,
right.
That's why like my average pace is like 60%, you know, in the gym. I'm never going 100 because what's the point? It's, you want to just kind of, nice slow burn pace to in your life for a long time, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Nice. Well, on that note, I think we're gonna wrap it up. It's a good place to finish. Christian, thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, man.
For taking the time.
Like I was saying, it's an honor to be here. And you know what? It just feels like catching up with a good friend, right? Like we haven't seen each other or talked in a while.
Well, you've been working a lot, dude. I've been a lot
yeah.
too. And we sometimes miss each other too. Like when you're in town, we try to train together, but sometimes we're busy, you're busy, and
Yeah.
we miss that two weeks goes by really fast.
I know there's only so much of me to go around, right? And like I gotta like cater to the wife too, because she works weekdays, so like you know, I'm sure you've seen her come into NKS to pull me out. She's called Arthur before, like, hey, where is he? It's kind of funny, but like
sure, yeah, she wants to see her husband, right? Like
yeah, I get it. Yeah, I'm away like half the year, right? So yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, you know, happy wife, happy life, my friend.
Oh yeah.
That's the way it is. Well,
yes,
thank
sir.
you. And hopefully we'll see you when you get back in a couple, maybe what, another week, a week and a half?
Yeah, I gotta do some overtime, but yeah, I'll be back
That's
for
right.
yeah a
We'll
little
get
bit.
back and maybe we'll do some rolls when you get back in the city.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Thanks, Christian. I really appreciate it. And thank you to everybody else for listening. And we will see everybody next week. Take care, everyone.
Okay. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.